Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, the podcast. I am Chet Haas from the Android UI Toolkit team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
And I'm Gabriel Peel from the Android Auto team.
Android Auto?
Yay!
Something that?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Is that like automation for
must be
factories or
it's
something?
It's an accessibility framework that allows you to drive your something like that.
Sort of, kind of. And by auto, we mean cars. Right.
Self-driving cars, so you're from the self-driving cars. Program.
The other Google Cars team, Android Auto.
All right, elevator pitch, what is Android Auto?
So with Android Auto, we looked at the way people use their Android phones, and we saw, based on our own usage and the way other people use their phones, that people use their phones when they're driving all the time. We do it, our friends do it, everyone around us is doing it. And it's not only dangerous, but it's also illegal in a lot of states.
I thought we were evolving those people out of society. The more they use the phone, the probability kicks in eventually.
Sure, but there's still a while to go.
Okay.
But yeah, and even here in the state of California, you can get a ticket just for using your phone, even at a stoplight or a red light. So we really wanted to give Android users a safer way to interact with those things that they do in their car already while they're driving. And so that's why we created Android Auto.
So how does it work?
So if you have any Android phone that's running Lollipop or above, and you get in a car that has Android Auto in it, then when you plug in your phone to charge, instead of just charging like it used to, it will actually bring up a new interface on the car's screen where you can then interact with a lot of the common and core features of your phone right there on the screen in the dashboard.
So it's like an ADB shell? You've got like a keyboard, an on-screen keyboard, you're typing things in.
So we've taken the experiences that people really used in their car, like Google Maps, messaging, phone calls, and their music, and we've redesigned the user interface from the ground up in a totally new way so that it makes sense in the car. And it can be used while you're driving with larger touch targets, larger font sizes, better contrast, day mode, night mode, and even consistency across different apps.
Right, Android has like a UI mode resource qualifier, right? So there's mm-hmm. one for dock, and I think there was one for car, actually. And I guess that's the old way you could actually put a resource that was for car dock. And so when it was in a car dock, it would switch. And I think there were some apps that did this, right? So you had like large, like, hey, find me gas stations, find me maps. So I'm guessing this is like that, but mm-hmm. at a much deeper level?
Exactly. It is a car dock in addition to everything else. So when you are using Android Auto, there is the Android Auto car dock, which is essentially as a splash screen over your phone, so because you can then interact with it on the screen in your dashboard.
But also the phone, because I thought I heard earlier that once you connect, like that phone becomes dead.
Right.
And, you know, the screen blacks out, and really you're supposed to use the main thing. But you're saying there still could be like car apps running on?
No, so the Android Auto car dock becomes the primary one, and it essentially does lock out your phone.
Okay, got
so
it.
Then you are forced to use it on the dashboard.
And that's to discourage people from continuing to
we think we've looked at
other things that they probably shouldn't.
We've looked at the way that people have been using their phones in the car, and we knew that we didn't want to bring the entire Android experience to the car because some things just don't make sense. Like, we don't want to watch YouTube videos in the dashboard of your car.
Well, honestly,
people want to.
Yeah.
I take a shuttle back home from work, and so I usually sit on the second floor of the double-decker bus, and I look out the window sometimes, daydreaming, and I look down into other cars, and I saw a person that had a tablet on their lap playing a movie.
Wow.
Driving in traffic. It was slow traffic, but it was not stopped. And so, you know, this is something people, again, probably need.
Evolution is going to kick in, I'm sure of it. So you listed, four applications, maps, messaging, phone, music. When you say messaging, you're talking SMS messaging, you're talking IM, you're talking email.
Hopefully it's voice messaging, right, if this is while you're driving?
Yeah, exactly. So we support not only just text messaging, but other messaging apps that you have on your phone. And so when you get a message, you'll get a notification on Android Auto on your car. You'll hear it audibly as well. And the Google Voice search will actually read the contents of that text out to you, and then you have the opportunity to reply with voice. And it works with text messages, Hangouts, but it also works with third-party messaging apps, which I'll get to a little bit later.
But they have to. This is not automatic, like Android Wear's notifications sort of being automatically read. Like, this actually requires the messaging apps to do something for Android Auto. Is that correct?
Right, exactly. And it is somewhat similar to the way you would make a messaging notification for Wear, but it's a very small amount of code that basically says, I would like this messaging app to be in the car, and then you can give it some contextual information like the unread messages and timestamp and people and things like that. We can touch on that a little bit more later if you want.
We can touch on it now.
Or right now. All right.
No agenda here.
So with Android Wear, there were some extensions added to the notification API on Android so that you can expose messaging apps to your watch and allow you to respond from your watch with voice. And so some of the new constructs that were created for that are remote input and wearable extender. And so remote input is essentially a small little piece of information that you can bundle into the wearable extender that says, I would like to enable voice replies for this message. And when Google Voice Search creates a reply and listens to what the user's response is, it will send it back to whatever component in the application that is specified by the remote input.
So they don't have to deal with the whole like figuring out how long to pause until you've done talking and, right. and that whole like confirm, that all happens automatically, and they just basically say, hey, I would like you to input something without.
Exactly. So to make it as consistent as possible, each messaging app can specify the messages that are unread, the people, the timestamp, and where they would like those replies to get sent back to with the pending intent. And then Google Voice Search will handle all of the different messaging apps in a consistent way with its own voice recognition to read back the message to the user, allow them to reply. And it even remembers context throughout the conversation in Google Voice Search. So if it reads you back the message, next time you talk to it, you can just say reply. And you don't have to give it any more information than that. It'll actually remember that you just got a message and reply to that message specifically.
So how do you, if you have several of these messaging applications, once you know developers opt into this thing and want to be in Android Auto, then all of a sudden mm-hmm. you have several to choose from. Is it going to use a typical Android mechanism, mm-hmm. like an intent chooser that it pops up on the screen for them to select this? Like if they want to send, obviously if you get a message through an app, that's easy. But mm-hmm. if you actually want to send a message, how does it know which one to go through?
So right now, the active sending of a message goes through GSA and what you can say through Google Voice Search on Android. And so if you just say send a message today, it will default to a text message. But in the future, you can specify that you can reply to actions from Google Voice Search. And so you'd be able to say send a message through Hangouts or through WhatsApp. Okay. Or something like that, and you could target a specific messaging app for those to get sent to.
Okay.
So you don't say hang out with, and then
and then they teleport into your car. It's awesome.
That's 2.0.
Because you were asking about the intent chooser.
Yeah.
And that I think brings up for me the question of the system UI. Does Android Auto have a totally different system UI, or is it like the Android one where you have the expected, the pop-up that shows you like which app to open it with and, just this time or always, or is it completely different?
So with Android Auto, everything that you can see in it was completely redesigned from the ground up for Android Auto. And we started with a blank slate that doesn't inherit any of Android's existing system UI applications or anything like that. So it's almost like a whitelist of what you see in Android Auto. And so there's nothing in Android Auto that wasn't designed specifically for it.
And so, is that because this is like being, I want to say X-hosted, right? Like in the old, Solaris and Linux days.
But remote projected.
Yeah. How does that work? I mean, the screen, as I understand it, is, for lack of a better word, a dumb terminal, right? It's just basically mm-hmm. a screen. And everything happens. All the computation happens on your phone. Is that correct? Or is there local computation in that display?
Exactly. So when you're using Android Auto, all of the apps, from the system UI to the music to Google Maps, they're actually all running on your phone. They're running in the original APK that is installed on the user's phone. So there's no separation between the phone app and the car app.
So it's not like the Android Wear application model where you have components that are on each device.
Correct. So with Android Wear, when you download an app that's compatible with Wear, it sends a little micro app onto the watch itself, and it actually runs code on the watch. With Android Auto, the screen in the car is much more like an external monitor for your phone. So when apps are running, instead of rendering to the primary screen on your phone, they are still running on the phone, but they're rendered to a virtual display in the background. And then they're rendered as an H.264 video stream and sent over to the car. And so there's no actual Android code running in the car.
So you send a video stream to the display, but there's also some inputs from hardware in the car going back, right? So how is that being sent?
Right, so we have a full protocol in which the Android phone can communicate with the car. It's the most obvious one is that video stream, so that you can actually see what you're interacting with in Android Auto, but it's a full two-way communication with the car that was designed for this application. So,
does that sense the screen size and the resolution of the mm-hmm. display, or is that like fixed by a standard and we're always using a particular size with Android Auto, or how does that work?
Yeah, so when the initial Android Auto connection is set up, there's a handshake process that happens where the phone tells the car information about itself, and the car shares some information about itself with the phone with things like its screen and what audio channels it supports and stuff like that. So from the phone, we send the video stream, which is just an H.264 video stream. We also send things like audio, and we split up audio into different streams for the car. Because car audio systems are actually quite complex and designed to make it easier for drivers and more enjoyable for passengers. And so when you're listening to music, you may play out of all four speakers, but when a navigation guidance comes in, some cars may elect to just play those navigation guidance directions through the driver's side speakers. And so the driver actually hears the turn-by-turn directions louder than the passengers, who will just continue to hear the music.
It also tends to mute the music or the audio, other audio happening at the same time, right?
Right, right. So it can dock the audio for the media and then play the turn-by-turn over it. But it can also adjust it depending on which passenger the speaker is closest to. So again, the driver might hear the turn-by-turn much louder than some of the passengers. So some cars are doing this today, and with Android Auto, we're starting to split up some of these audio streams into media, navigation, and voice responses so that the car can appropriately play it for the right people.
Sorry, you were going to say something that I totally interrupted.
Mm-hmm. I was going to try to make a joke.
I can't go back now.
Hey, remember when you said...
I was ducking your audio at the time, and I was just getting turned.
More like
turns.
Muting, yeah.
So I had an original question, which was, so you listed like four apps off the bat: maps, messaging, phone, music, and is that it? Like, are these the categories of apps that are allowed to run? Because there's safety concerns, so you're not going to play YouTube videos. My favorite app that I saw someone using her Samsung Note 4 was a makeup mirror. I'm thinking that's not appropriate for the car. You're not going to have a little
They already have that installed.
In display
You've seen people lean over and use the rearview mirror as a makeup mirror, right?
But wouldn't it be cool?
Any
to
commute
do it
morning,
device?
You'll see that.
Yeah, so we have the core experiences built into Android Auto, which are Google Maps. It's communication that's both through messaging and phone calls. We have music, and through whichever music apps you have on your phone, which we'll also get to in a minute. And then we have an overview, which takes content from all these different sources in Google Now and gives the user one area in which they can quickly glance and get information from all of these different sources right away. So you'll see your upcoming turn, suggested destinations, what you're currently listening to. It's also where messages appear.
Okay. So if you are a developer and you want to write an app for this awesome new experience and form factor, your app is going to fit into one of these buckets. Right? These are not like, hey, make your app. Like for the TV space, it's basically do the following things, take this different layout and the lean back UI into account and then expose it as a TV app. That is not the case for Android Auto, right?
Exactly. We specifically picked messaging and media as the first ways that third parties can interact with Android Auto and expose their apps content to Android Auto. So again, it's messaging and media apps.
If not, you just know people would write like a car racing app.
Yeah. Right. Maybe that's what the guy was playing on the tablet on his lap. He wasn't watching like random video. He was actually playing like Grand Theft Auto while he was sitting in traffic. It's just supposed to motivate you, to get up that day. Whatever gets you through the day. Okay, so what is the process for developers to actually do this then? For, let's say they have a music app or whatever. Like, what are they going to do to modify their app to make it auto capable?
Right, so in order to expose either a messaging or a media app to Android Auto, the first thing you have to do is configure your manifest to tell Android that your app is going to be shown in the car. And so it involves adding a piece of metadata to your Android manifest, which points to and an additional XML resource file where you specify that it's an automotive app and whether it's a media app or a messaging app. And then this not only exposes that to the car, but through the Play Store process, when you upload your app to the Play Store, it flags that to be shown in the car. And then people are actually going to go and review that app and make sure that it meets contrast testing and safety testing so that it's easy to read and it's not going to be distracting during the day or night.
Okay, so these apps are more carefully moderated then because there are safety concerns that aren't the case for
Phones
that people are using.
Exactly, yeah. So before it can be shown in the car, there will be a manual review process where people will actually be looking at these apps and ensuring that they meet contrast and safety testing, and that they also that they do what they say.
It's funny that auto apps are manual. it's hilarious. Okay.
Well, I had a question on the back to the whole video stream and everything. So the screen sizes can vary, right? Like different cars can have different screen sizes.
Mm-hmm.
So do these apps still use the same Android layout system then, where you can have variable sizes of screens and you can basically make sure that your app has different overlays and everything doing things based on the available screen size?
So in the first version of Android Auto, we found that a common resolution for a lot of these car screens is 800 by 480,
okay,
which it might sound low compared to the resolution of your phones today.
It does.
It's MDPI for those who have been creating assets.
I think that's actually the size of the status bar.
Yeah, for sure. But when you're actually driving, when you glance at that screen from the distance that you sit from that screen, it actually looks totally fine. Mm-hmm. You can take my word for it there. But
how does that compare to like a, you know, one of those like Garmin or whatever
I don't know what those are. But
okay.
Yeah. But 800 by 480, that's actually the native resolution of a lot of these screens today. And so that's the one we're coming out of the box with. But as Android Auto updates, because it's actually running on your phone, updates to Android Auto will automatically show up in your car. And so as you get a new phone, or we push an update to Android Auto, or any of the apps that are on your phone, you may start to see some of these changes in Android Auto in your car. And so throughout the lifetime of when you're using Android Auto, it might, if you have a car that has a screen that's higher than 800 by 480, it may be 800 by 480 at the beginning, but throughout the lifetime of your car or when you change phones, that may actually improve or change over time.
So I'm curious about this. So Tora was asking about, you know, the layout file, and you have a different screen size you have to account for. But how much are application developers providing the UI that's going to be shown to the user, and how much is Android Auto actually doing for them? Like, are you taking the content from media apps and playing it through a UI that you have configured, or are you actually showing the UI of their app on the screen?
So with Android Auto, we've created all the apps ourselves, and so any specific UI that's shown on the screen is within the Android Auto app.
These
messaging apps and media apps expose their content in a way that's
flexible. So they're implementing interfaces. So you're basically saying, hey, if you want to be a music app, mm-hmm. here's the return playlist.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Understand. All right. Yeah. So there's really no UI programming involved. It's really basically providing data for the apps.
Exactly. In Lollipop, we added an entirely new set of media APIs that enables exposing really complex content across a range of different media apps to the car. And so not only have we replaced the older remote control client on Android, which exposes some basic media functionality like play, pause, previous, and next, but we've augmented that with a new media session set of APIs. And so media session, it's the new version of a remote control client and adds a bunch of new functionality. So that when you're playing media through Android, if you create a media session, you can then tell that session information about the current state of what's playing, the metadata for it. You can even expose some custom actions. So whatever specific functionality is unique to your app that's not covered by the common set of things like play and pause, fast forward and rewind, you can then expose both with an action and with your own custom assets. So things like thumbs up, thumbs down, start a radio station, those kinds of things can now be exposed to media session. And because it's the new version of remote control client, it can be used by multiple different interfaces on Android. It's kind of like a write once, exposed to all of your Android world kind of an experience. And so Android Wear will automatically make notifications for the active media session. There's even a new notification style in Lollipop. So if you're building a notification, if you wanted to make one for your media app prior to Lollipop, you'd actually have to create a custom remote view with your own buttons and actions and stuff like that and keep it up to date with the current play state as your media changes. But now if you use Media Session, you can specify that the notification that you're building is a media type and tied to the media session that you created. And Android will automatically keep that notification up to date as your media changes, as long as you keep Media Session up to date. And then in addition, since we're talking about Android Auto uses that same media session to know what's going on with your media app, to control it, and to display the current information and functionality to the user.
So you're talking about notifications, but you don't actually get notifications on Android Auto. Like
right.
I think we're blending
right.
between Android yeah. Auto and Android Wear because they're sort of parallel platforms. Right.
Right. right. So there, that was kind of all three platforms yeah. there. So you have notifications on Android Wear, also in the notification shade on your phone.
Yeah.
Those media style notifications will stay up to date. But then also the media app in Android Auto will use that same media session, so all three will stay in sync.
Okay. So the audio is not going to be telling me that I'm, you know, missing a meeting in 10 minutes or anything.
Right.
Okay. That would get a little noisy there. So I was curious what you actually did on the team. So you're an engineer on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So you work on what aspect of it?
So I was one of the founding engineers on the Android Auto team. So, and when I started, it was basically some whiteboard sketches and not a whole lot more than that. And since then, I've worked on a variety of different aspects of the product, both on the application framework side of it. I've worked on the media app, some of these new media APIs. I worked on the integration with Google Now and that overview screen where it pulls in content from other apps and it gives you one space where you can see all the information that's important for you, the notifications, the phone app, as well as the system UI. So kind of a wide breadth yeah. of things across the product.
And you actually came, so you're interested in cars, like your interest in the whole project is the actual car angle, right? So you came from auto industry?
Yeah, so I've been a car guy my whole life.
Okay.
Growing up when I was a kid, I would subscribe to every car magazine you could think of and I would read them cover to cover every month. And so since then, I've always just loved cars, but as my career has moved towards software, I wound up here at Google and found the opportunity to both merge cars and software in a really seamless way. And actually, also, I worked on cars before Google as well. I worked at General Motors working on the Volt before coming here. So I have both experience with software and cars, and now I'm bringing them together.
Electric cars are interesting because it seems to be the place where the auto industry is adding new technology in general. Because mm-hmm. like they sort of understand, okay, the demographic of people who are going to buy this vehicle are early adopters, and therefore we can try out, you know, new concepts like the push button stuff seem to be in those types of cars and sort of other dashboard newnesses.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely a super exciting time for cars. Whereas we're about to see a huge wave of technology across cars, both from electric cars to the software that's running in cars to their ability to drive themselves. You're starting to see a whole range of self-driving cars where there's one end where the cars can drive themselves everywhere. You don't have to ever even need to touch the steering wheel. And then there are cars that are already on the road today that you can actually buy that can essentially drive themselves on the highway. And they'll stay in your lane, sometimes even change lanes, follow the car in front of you, maintain a safe following distance, and stuff like that. So automakers across the world are really starting to take technology extremely seriously, and they're investing a lot in all aspects of technology in their cars right now.
Is there any thought to making apps? Or I mean, could Android Auto, you know, expose cameras, right? So for example, you could have an app that helps you back out, right? So it's like it actually showing in the place, in at your screen, it could actually show the reverse camera while you're doing that, for example, right? And the app could even do some like 3D modeling and mm-hmm. tell you stuff. Or is that sort of left to the individual car makers, and this is really for media and messaging?
So in the first version of Android Auto, the way it is today, if you go into reverse, you will see your reverse camera with the automaker software running on it.
So it's like just a protocol for like it can take over. Like
right,
this
right.
is more important than what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But because of the way Android Auto works and because it's updatable and it can change over time, I can't speak to what our future roadmap is, but we can add new functionality throughout the lifetime of your vehicle. So if you own your car for 10 years, and it has Android Auto, you will get 10 years of software updates on your car. As we push updates through Voice Search and Google Now and the Android Auto app, or you update your phone to make it faster or what have you, you'll start to see all those updates in your car, and all of a sudden, this the software that you're used to in your car is all of a sudden much more modern, and it changes, and it gets better over time.
So I was realizing if your car is going to automatically pop up the rear view display in the Android Auto display as you're backing up, then that person could, for a compact mirror, actually run out of their car and look at that camera to get their face on the dashboard. So this could yes. work, actually.
Yeah, exactly. You could do that today with any car and as a camera. You don't even need Android Auto.
I mean, you have to run back quick enough to actually fix it up, and it's tricky, but you can make it work.
Yeah, don't leave it in neutral. Otherwise, you'll have to walk backwards quickly with it.
Let's see. So I was curious. We were talking about technology in automobiles. Like, clearly they're trying to play catch up to some extent and sort of add new technology that's coming online like this. But traditionally, the auto industry is kind of like the aerospace industry. Like, they're using technology that was invented, I don't know, in the 1800s, mm-hmm. right? Like, they're so slow to adopt things, and part is safety concerns, but there are also sort of these dinosaur behemoths that move very slowly. They're very large organizations. So I was curious what it was like to work in this industry where we're pushing the envelope on technology with an industry that really doesn't even know what an envelope is.
So, that's a really interesting point, and it's quite fascinating to work in a company and like Google, and then versus something like the automotive industry, where I think the fundamental difference just has to do with the way that you release products. Whereas here at Google, right, being a software-focused company, we can just flip the switch on a new product. We can push it to a billion people overnight, and even in the next day start working on the next release, finish it, and then we could potentially, again, flip the switch the next day and ship it to a billion people if we needed to. But with the automotive industry, the product roadmap for these cars is so much longer than it is for software. And so
and
a lot of
leaves
cases,
the factory floor,
right.
Fixing it is very costly.
Exactly. So you have these products where the development started 5 years ago, 6 years ago, for the cars that are shipping far in the future, and they have to build them far in advance and finish them far in advance. And then once they stamp it and it leaves the factory, a lot of times these cars are not connected, and there's actually no way that you can push them updates or with any reliable way count that they'll be able to be updated in any way. And it affects not only just your ability to push new features, but you have to be really careful with the software that you do push, because if you launch software on a car that has a bug, it is going to be there forever. There's nothing you can do about it, and you have to be aware that when you ship software that has bugs, that there will be users that are encountering that bug forever, and you can't count on them ever being able to update the software in their car. And so they have that just gives you a very fundamentally different approach to the way that you develop software and the way that you design software, which is why Android Auto gives you a slightly different, it takes a different approach to the software that runs in the car, because it's actually running on the phone and it has the similar upgrade lifecycle to what you're used to on your apps with the apps on your phone. But now you can use it in your car and it can be updated in the same way as your phone.
Do you have trouble interfacing, though, between this system, which is more in line with software systems that we know, and this infrastructure that we have to interface with? So, they need you to plug into their system that, it can charge the phone and also send the video stream over there and send the interaction points from the screen back to the phone. Like, mm-hmm. you have to connect to the hardware somewhere and to mm-hmm. the manufacturers that are going to buy into these standards or interfaces that you are going to provide, right?
Exactly. So for Android Auto, we've actually created a protocol that's common across all the different automakers. And then we have a reference implementation library for the automaker end and an integration guide that essentially specifies the way that a car needs to interact with the protocol that we created.
So what does the protocol entail?
And so the protocol includes some of the things you mentioned, like the video stream, that initial handshake with the screen resolution and whatnot, audio streams. Coming back from the car, you get things like touch events, microphone. You even get some sensor data like GPS. So we can use the car's GPS which is not only more accurate, but it also enables us to turn the GPS off on the phone. Mm. And so when you're using Google Maps and Android Auto together, we can completely turn off those sensors on the phone and actually save you some battery life there.
Speaking of sensors, can you get information about, you know, remaining battery or remaining gasoline so that, you know, you could alert the driver if gas is low and they're not looking at the old meter, but they're looking at the screen, or B, alert them when they're using navigation that they have inadequate fuel. Is that
so? Fuel level is one of the potential things that we can get from the car. So there's a core set of functionality that we will get from all cars that will enable the core experiences like music and maps. And then there are some optional ones that may vary slightly from manufacturer to manufacturer, such as fuel level. So,
because that one seems like it would really depend. I mean, the amount of gas left, well, you need to know the burn rate. You know, is it a gas guzzler or something small? Or, you know, if it's battery, that's totally different.
Exactly.
So there were announcements, at I.O. last year about partners that we have that we're working with. Are there are the things that have come out with since then, or like where are consumers starting to see this stuff?
So when we first announced this at Google I.O. last year, we had a large array of different partners we're working with that
are the people that bought into the protocol.
Yeah, exactly. And they're all companies that have committed to ship Android Auto in the next year or two. And now, just under 1 year later, we are just hitting the road right now. In fact, the first products that run Android Auto are on store shelves now. There's some Pioneer head units that you can go and buy. There's three models they have right now. It's a 8100, 7100, and 4100 series head units that support Android Auto. And you can go buy one today and have that retrofitted into an existing car. So you can actually have that in your car today without having to go out and buy a new car. And then throughout the rest of 2015 and 2016, Android Auto will be rolling out across over 40 different other automakers and aftermarket head unit makers. So
like
we're about to see an explosion of rolling out of... Yeah.
Okay. I think anyone uses the term explosion around cars, dude.
I want to talk about crashes and reboots.
In a very safe way. Safe explosion of
So I guess it makes sense to have the head unit, the separable thing first, because basically that just takes the time to do, you know, the software to finish up your portion of it and a device manufacturer to manufacture something that's essentially a tablet, as opposed to like, yeah, then we had a new, you know, car. Mm-hmm. Like all these auto manufacturers, they already had plans in the works when they started talking to you about the new protocol, and then they have to put that in their future car.
Well, I think for a car manufacturer, probably they want to incentivize you to buying a new car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think?
I would think. As opposed to trying to retrofit, you know, that old...
Yeah, it's just a matter of how fast they can get that in their line. Just the lead time. I mean, it's the lead times of, like, building the cars, but also building the factories, all the infrastructure they need to produce these behemoths, right? So then, you know, they say, yes, this is a good idea. It'll go in our product line for whatever. And then n number of years later, you start to see it, right?
Yeah, that being said, though, they're very, very excited about working with us on this. And the first cars are going to be hitting the road in the coming months, by very, very, very soon. And then quickly, as soon as those first cars start hitting the road, you're going to see a huge ramp up of the amount of cars that are shipping with Android Auto throughout, again, 2015 and the 2015 model line cars even, and 2016. So this is something that's actually hitting the road very, very soon.
International, I assume? Because the manufacturers that were mentioned at I.O. were like, you know, these are world companies, these aren't.
Yeah, yeah, it's rolling out across several different countries, and it'll just go up over time.
Yep, cool. I'm sort of all out of questions. You got anything else?
Where can I buy one? Well, I am so ready for this.
What's your favorite car?
Favorite car? Oh, it's like... when you know a language and they like to say a sentence in that language.
You can have more than one.
How about top 50?
Top 50, right. Yeah. All right, here we go. I've recently spent a lot of time in the... I know it's not the most expensive car, but I've recently spent a lot of time in the Audi A3, and I've been a big fan of that. It's a great car. It's a good mix of... It's quite sporty, but it also... it looks good and it drives well.
Creature comforts as well. Yeah. All right. And what's your favorite car technology besides Android Auto?
Besides Android Auto.
I mean, there's a lot of new stuff coming out, whether it's, you know, the electric drive stuff or, you know, new battery technology that enables that or just some of the dash features or whatever.
I'm a big fan of the way electricity has been being used to augment cars, not necessarily in just solely pure electric cars, but because electricity has a different power delivery curve than a traditional combustion engines, where you get that torque really quickly, companies are starting to now use electricity to their advantage, not just for better gas mileage or for purely electric cars, but actually to augment that low-end torque of combustion engines. And so you're starting to see this a lot on the higher-end cars, like a McLaren P1 or a Porsche 918 or something like that, where they're achieving these performance benchmarks that are just completely unparalleled compared to cars before it. But you'll start to see those trickle down into lower-end cars where at some point in the future you'll be able to buy a reasonably priced car that has just a power curve completely unlike anything you've ever experienced with an electric or an internal combustion engine.
It's interesting because the start of the electric stuff was in the hybrid cars like the Prius I own, which is not known for, you know, acceleration curves, right?
Exactly.
So it sort of became synonymous with driving really slowly and gradually. So it's interesting that it sort of turned around and like.
But, I mean, that must have been by choice, right? Because the electric
engine is about economy.
Because they have the most torque at zero, and then the eddy currents basically ruins it when you go fast. But I would think that
exactly.
Like yeah, if I they don't know for what some reason can't accelerate, they must have just done something on purpose.
Well everything is
opposite,
everything
right? Tesla has an amazing acceleration.
Like the P85D, for example, it's so fast off the line. You know, when I was working on the Volt over at GM, we had to significantly tune down that initial power output of the battery because it would literally just twist the drive shaft off. It had so much torque you could snap it in half. Wow. with the amount of torque that it can deliver. So it all comes down to tuning and whether you're trying to get gas mileage or performance, sportiness, or what have you. But definitely it gives you a lot of potential because now you have essentially unlimited power on the low end with electric and incredible high-end performance now with internal combustion engines that are also getting smaller as you move to turbo engines and whatnot. So,
cool. Yeah. I think this is the most I've talked about cars ever. But very interesting.
So my favorite is the LiDAR because I can't wait for self-driving cars. I just want to kick back in the front seat, pull out a margarita, and read a book.
You can do that now if you want. It's just not going to go well.
Yeah. It's one step up from watching, you know, videos.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks.
All right. Thank you very much.